All right, we'll go ahead and start with our next one. Stephanie will talk about everybody's got to eat, which I agree. And okay. Let's hear what you have to say.
All right.
I eat early and I eat often, so.
We do. Everybody does have to eat. And so thanks for coming this morning. It's Wednesday. Usually audiences are a little thin. This is going to be a little bit different from the rest of the session. But this stemmed from teaching experience that I had earlier this year. So a little bit of background. So my education, a little history I'm going to tell you. I've got a farm background. I've got a bachelor's in micro, a master's in biology. I've spent about the past 25 years in agricultural and molecular research. I've done a little bit of outreach with like-minded ag, you know, or science teachers, and in my nice, cozy College of Ag Bio, working with ag and biology students, you know, but I'm not completely isolated. You know, I do, you know, some work with engineering, and I've got some city folk that are relatives, and so I understand their confusion about, you know, where food comes from and how things are grown. And recently, I got my PhD in plant science last summer, and so that led to an opportunity to teach at Augustana University, a private university down in Sioux Falls, and I taught labs for Bio 110 for non-biology majors. It's only 65 miles from Brookings, you know, south of Brookings, where we are surrounded by corn and soybeans and cattle and horses. And there's a lot of student engagement, and we get to know our students and what they do and what they like and what they think and what their majors are and their strong beliefs. And their beliefs include all genetic engineering is bad, very bad. Foods don't contain genes unless they've been modified and other such myths. Producers shouldn't have to use chemicals to control pests or weeds. Now they don't have any alternative plans. They just know that chemicals shouldn't be used. Personal gardens or organic can feed everyone, I guess. Or, you know, and they just didn't really care to be there for the most part because science wasn't their gig. It wasn't really what they wanted to be. Some of them were interested, but for the most part, they just didn't really want to be there. And that kind of set up some alarm bells because the majors represented there were government and international affairs or political science, you know, journalism and communication studies, education, ASL. ASL stands for American Sign Language, and there were some others represented as well. I mean, these were bright, passionate, smart, driven, well-spoken students, all right? And this is where some teacher enlightenment took place because these were government and international affairs and political science majors, journalism, communication study majors who were misinformed and science and ag illiterate. This is not a good thing. And so I went in search of validation, right? I did some online literature search because that's what I do. I'm a researcher. I looked at some popular media, but I'm not a social scientist. I'm not an education major. I didn't exactly know where to look, but I went to some, you know, Google Scholar, and I tried to find some studies, and I tried to find some surveys. But I had a really, really hard time finding some valid, honest-to-goodness content and some data, because you'd put things in, you know, percentage of Americans that know where hamburger comes from or information, and you'd get just junk. Right? The surprising number of American adults who think chocolate milk. Did you guys hear this? 7% of Americans believe chocolate milk comes from brown cows. Did anybody see this? Seriously. And so this was a survey conducted by the Innovation Center U.S. Dairy in June of this past year, and it was carried by everybody, every major news station that there was. Right? Scary, right? A little alarming. But there's some honest-to-goodness studies out there. This Michigan State study, the Food Literacy and Engagement Poll, and this was frightening. 43% of Americans between 18 and 30 years of age believe that genetically modified foods have genes, but non-genetically modified foods don't. Right? Yeah, I know, scary. All right, and so why is this? And so maybe they have a poor science background, they weren't paying attention in science class, there's just a lack of interest there. But nowadays, they are bombarded with misinformation and half-truths out there. And so I kind of started looking around, and just daily you see this stuff. Okay, this is a campaign out there by PETA now, today. I went and I looked at their website, and you can find this on their website today. Has your child got autism instead of got milk? Learn about the link between autism and dairy products. at PETA.org. This one's on a website, Our Bodies on GMOs. And on that same website, there's in their article, Farmers Injecting Strawberries with GMOs from Fish. And this one I thought appropriate for this time of year, the zombie children eating the Monsanto corn, right? And so they're bombarded with the misinformation. And nowadays, most people are now at least three generations removed from the farm. Okay, and that's just the way it is. All right, so back in the 1960s, only 8.6% of the U.S. population lived on farms. It's quite a chunk of us were still on the farms. But that's gradually declined decade by after decade after decade. And by now, it's less than 2%. I couldn't get the exact number. But it's low. And those living in rural communities is even less. So some of the agricultural questions and myths that we hear nowadays, what's a combine? I mean, people don't know these basic things. What's it shooting out the back? Why do farmers leave the crops dying in fields? This is one I just heard lately, and it had never occurred to me. They look at the fields, and it was all green, and now they're brown and dying. They don't understand what's going on. DNA is in foods. And the statement, man didn't mess with DNA when they were just breeding plants. You know, they don't understand. Natural is always good. Poison, ivy, or vomitoxin, anyone? Free range is better, yeah, to a point, and especially for the foxes at night. They don't understand how we do animal husbandry and how we raise our animals for livestock production either. Okay, and back to this brown cow. And so this survey conducted, the survey results are not publicly available at all. But there was an interview on NPR with Jean Regley Carb, the president of the National Dairy Council, and she mentioned that the potential responses available were there was brown cows, there were black and white cows, or there was I don't know. And so those are the only responses available to the participants. And I hate to tell you folks, but both of those cows produce milk. So trying to verify those facts when people actually attempt to can be very, very difficult because the facts can be buried. Online polls can be tricked, and surveys can't always be trusted. And so I had my validation. And so what are the possible societal consequences? Well, you know, the plenary speaker made a point when she talked about getting the public involved with our funding and the public involved with our research direction. And so the very real fact of the matter is, especially when you look at the events happening now, right now, and I used to think, well, maybe I'm wearing a tin hat, and I don't think so. Policies could very well be made by science and ag literates. Mass media is being produced by science and ag literates, and research funding can very well be dictated by science and ag literates. And so there's educational efforts underway right now. Locally, we've got Hungry for Truth, and it's a push being made by the South Dakota Soybean Research and Promotion Council. This is their website. And it's designed to open conversations about food between South Dakotans and the farmers who grow it. It's a very cute, very nice. And, you know, the theme is you don't shame people into being ashamed for what they think, for what they feel, because a lot of these things are based on emotions, and these organizations know it, and they run with it. You don't want to shame them. You want to educate them, right? State extension agencies try to educate people. There's urban gardening movements that are trying to educate people and trying to push them to eat better and educate them about how to grow their food, how to store their food. There's numerous community education projects. There's very many success stories at universities. There's universities that teach classes, but to go out and figure out which universities teach these classes is very, very hard because to know the search terms to look for the classes is almost impossible. That's like the master's student project, and I'm not a master's student, and I don't need another project. And so I did find a class, Effects of Global Agriculture on World Culture, taught by Dr. Robert Beckstead. This was run in a Farm Bureau article. And a quote from one of his students, I didn't know anything about agriculture before this class, but I absolutely love learning about it. And I now know the science behind GMOs and will laugh at people who think they are dangerous. They used to be me. I was shocked by Food Inc. when I saw it and totally believed every second of it. But now I laugh more, especially at myself, because propaganda got me good. So, has anybody seen the Food Inc. movie? So the Food Inc. movie was done by a couple of producers. How much time do I have? All right. So the Food Inc. movie I watched on the plane on the way here, because I'd never seen it, I'd heard about it. There's about this much truth in it. There's about yay much lies in it. And the rest of it is filled with this mishmash mix of half-truth and half-lies, and it is done very, very well. And a lot of people see that and swallow it hook, line, and sinker. So if you've never been on a farm, if you don't know anything about harvesting and growing your own animals or your food, you're going to take it for the Bible, right? About how things are done. And a lot of people take that and believe it. And if you believe that all producers raise and treat their animals that way, you're going to be dead set against eating meat. And that's just the way it is. All right, so what do we do with our non-majors that believe that? We address the issues one by one. And many had no idea about the medical issues that deal with GEs. So we talked about rennet and cheese and golden rice and insulin, about disease resistance and crops. We talked about the issues of land ownership and food security. And, you know, that 2050 food security issue, that was an eye-opener for a lot of them. And we ended up changing most of their minds. Not all of them, but most of them. And so my goal is to develop a fun, engaging basics of food sources, animal welfare and husbandry, conventional versus organic production, GMOs and their uses. I'd like to discuss documentaries versus shockumentaries in my class. I want to talk about the effects of policy on local producers, U.S. producers, what it really does to them and how they farm, if they even get to farm after policy is implemented, and the effect of policy on U.S. and world food supply, teach them home gardening, canning, urban gardening, and critical thinking skills. Teach them to think for themselves and not believe everything that they hear, everything that they see. My challenge to the audience is if you know your university teaches a farm-to-table class, great. If it doesn't, develop a required basics of modern living or global science class at your institution, all right? The land grant missions, to every one of them, say teaching, research, and service. And if we're not teaching them the basics about what is in their food, where the food comes from, and ensuring through research that there's going to be food for the future generations, isn't it performing the greatest disservice that there is? Because everybody's got to eat, right? So I'd like to thank Sharon and David Clay. They're my mentors. SDSU Agronomy, Horticulture, and Plant Science Department, South Dakota Soybean Research and Promotion Council, and Augustana University for allowing me to go down and teach for a semester and opening my eyes. So thank you very much.
We have time for questions. Plenty of time.
Just a comment related to what you're presenting. A few years ago, I was a member of the Cape Town Agronomy Society. We had we were part of a festival in Washington, D.C. They invited different organizations. There were like 50,000 kids from the university to see. We had a display of soil, corn plant, and then chips at the end. So we asked the kids, these are like thousands of kids, we asked them, where did you get these chips? The answer was Walmart,
yep.
Foods,
yep.
Whatever store
yep.
they have. They don't have this connection
yeah.
with plant and soil. So I think I agree with you. It starts from, you know, from us educating our kids
right.
up to the non
yep.
majors,
yep.
the science majors.
Yep. And if you can, we're generating thousands of graduates every year out of our land-grant universities that don't know the importance of teaching their children. And when they graduate, this is right before they're becoming parents, right? My mother-in-law works in the administration of San Antonio School District, and the fifth graders were given something about milk coming from cows. And one of the parents called the administration furious because they hadn't had that discussion with their child and told them that milk came from the store. And, you know, that's what we're battling. That's what we're fighting. And it's a losing battle. And we've got to do something about it. Because what we're doing right now, it isn't working. It's just not working. We need to do something about it.
The step up or make one comment, we do have a lot of ideas, whatever it is.
The bugs.
Food system.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that it's not a required class for every person in the university, and we're aligned by college. And yeah, I think we are doing a disservice to a lot of our students.
And I need to do a disclaimer because SDSU doesn't know that I said it should be required. And I almost think that it should be partial tuition because then you'd get people not bucking the system saying it's required. But we've got to do something. We have
time for one quick question.
Does this qualify for a science class for a non-science major?
You know, the way that University of Georgia did it is he got some cultural something credits on it because he said he had global in it, but I don't know.